absolutely. It's a big game of chess.
I don't like the analogy.
No, it is, Kenny. Dustin's right. People, it's a meme, but online people call it anime chess.
Welcome once again to New Game Plus. You are listening to a retro gaming podcast where three guys spend 7 days playing one old game, and then we talk about it. My name's Dustin.
My name's Kenny.
My name is Nolan.
And this is episode 106. The NES Classic, the Super NES Classic, both sold like cakes that were above room temperature.
Cherry cakes.
Warm cakes.
My question for you guys is, could Nintendo have even bigger plans for 2018 with either a Game Boy Classic or a Nintendo 64 Classic?
I think they'll go as far as doing the 64.
Really?
I don't know. With the weird controller, it's weird, and so maybe not. But I could, Game Boy could work, sort of.
There was some news going around, some questions about a Game Boy Classic because the trademark had been purchased or something by Nintendo, or the patent, I don't know. But it doesn't, you can't go off of those, you know, they could just be preserving their IP.
Sure. Yeah.
But Game Boy Classic?
I mean, maybe Game Boy, but I don't think so.
Yeah, Game Boy is more likely in my mind too.
Because the 3DS... has all of those titles on the virtual console. And like the Switch and the Wii U have a bunch of N64 games on the virtual console. But I guess you can make the argument that they also had SNES and NES titles, but and they still made it. But to me, those, maybe the Game Boy, but the N64 doesn't have a retro vibe to it, period. And I don't think it will until like a long time from now. So, I don't think so.
Well, and like, they do the kind of mini controller. You literally couldn't shrink a Nintendo 64 controller.
Oh, right.
And so, like, you'd be remaking actual controllers, but with a different interface, just because of the way your hands have to sit on it. I don't know. I think just, even functionally, it would be a very different beast to try and make and sell.
Yeah.
I've heard stuff about both, and I've heard about 2018 for both. I have no idea. Do you think that... a new Game Boy, but with, we've got mobile phones already. Like, do you think there's any kind of contention there?
Well, that and the other Nintendo handheld consoles, it would only be for like throwback sake. And I don't know if that wouldn't sell as well as the Super Nintendo. I don't think it would. I really don't.
I don't think so either. I think the 64 would do better if they could pull it off, but I think they're less likely to do it.
If there were, if a Game Boy Classic came out, what games would you want to see on it?
Oh, Tetris, Super Mario Land.
The original Metroid?
Yeah, the original, well, Metroid 2.
Pokemon?
Probably. Yeah. Actually, not a Game Boy Color title, that's a Game Boy title. Yeah. Pokemon, wow, I don't know. Alleyway, that was another classic. Alleyway. I loved Alleyway.
Which would you rather, the classic, the Game Boy or the Nintendo 64? Like, which one would you, if you were buying one of them, which one would you buy? Which one would you enjoy playing most?
I would buy the Game Boy one over the N64 one because I would just go to eBay and buy a real N64 if I wanted one.
That's my problem.
Because I wouldn't want a weird one that has games loaded on it because I have all the games and I prefer cartridge.
Yeah, I've got a functional 64 and most of the games I would want to play, and so I just wouldn't buy one of those.
That's a good point.
If I didn't, I think I'd snap one up way before a Game Boy. But I just don't think I'd buy either. And I own the NES Classic and would love the Super but don't care about the others.
I'd probably go with 64 just so that I could probably start the Smash series, which is the game that was made popular by the character that was added in like the second Smash game, Marth, which is also the main character in our retro game of the week. Fire Emblem, Mystery of the Emblem.
Well segued.
Yeah, he got me with that one. That was quick.
Overview.
Fire Emblem, Mystery of the Emblem, or simply Fire Emblem 3, was released exclusively in Japan in 1994. And it came out on the Super Famicom, which for us is just the Super Nintendo Entertainment System.
Yeah.
And was developed by Intelligent Systems and published by Nintendo. Nintendo started this, like this is their series exclusively, like from the start?
Yeah. 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 Okay. Intelligent Systems partnering with Nintendo. Yeah. It's always been them.
And if all of that's not different enough, the game is split into two different books. And, yeah. And so it's really two different games, mm-hmm. just kind of with the same skin over it. So book one is a remake of Fire Emblem 1 with, from what I gather, I never played the original, but with some of the content removed.
Yeah, about 5 chapters and a bunch of characters too. I don't know why they did that.
So weird.
I thought it was like a full-on remake, but it's like a pared-down remake.
It's most of the game. I mean, the game's long, and so 5 chapters sounds like a lot, but it's not. And 4 characters sounds like a lot, but it's not. There's just a lot of content in that game, and they remade that game for DS later, and they put all that back in. I don't know.
It probably was just a limitation on how much they could fit then.
I'm sure it was space issues. This was their first 16-bit. Game in the series. Everything before had been 8, and so moving into this kind of new era that I'm sure they were limited to fit 2 games on there, right? Book 2 is a sequel to the original Fire Emblem, and it takes place, I think, a year after the first game ends. So kind of here's the story, and we're not going to get deep into it because with Fire Emblem, these stories get crazy quick. In book 1, it has the Shadow Dragon reviving and teaming up with a couple of evil empires to, I don't know, like wreak havoc. And 14-year-old Marth is a direct descendant of the warrior who slayed the Shadow Dragon the first time. And Marth has his life and his country turned upside down from the dragon and these two empires. His father's killed, his sister is taken hostage. He himself is now in exile. And for whatever reason, the young prince takes it upon himself to exact revenge and save the world with the help of 45 playable characters.
Welcome to Fire Emblem.
It's crazy. Book 2 is, surprise, right? The Shadow Dragon is still alive, and now Marth's own military is being corrupted by the dark side, and Mark embarks on a quest to retrieve the 12 Star Sphere shards to revive the shattered Star Sphere and once and for all banish. It's very, very JRPG, right? Like,
oh yeah,
it fits the absolutely trope perfectly.
To a fault. Yeah. To a fault.
I mean, so like, you could probably make a list of like, these are the 10 stereotypical JRPG tropes or characteristics, and this game or in this series probably is going
has
to fit
11
perfectly.
Of them.
Yeah, yeah. Has all 12 of them. And so the stories are set up that way. And by the way, these games have the longest intro text telling the story. Like, it's going to take you half of your game time.
It's really funny hearing y'all talk about it because all of this is not news to me. I am used to the Fire Emblem paradigm.
Right, which is super interesting. So, Kenny, had you played any Fire Emblems prior to this week? And if so, which ones?
I don't know. I don't believe so, but well, no, if I have, my experience is limited. There is a tactical combat RPG that looks and plays somewhat similarly.
Final Fantasy Tactics?
That I played a little bit of at some point on something later than the Super Nintendo. But if so, it was very minimal. And I think it was another game that was more a Fire Emblem knockoff than a Fire Emblem game, but
probably.
I'm not certain. So not much.
And a year or two ago, I played my first Fire Emblem game. Nolan had talked about the series a lot. I can roll with the tactical RPG. JRPGs are my bread and butter. So he had me play Sacred Stones for the Game Boy Advance. But that's the only Fire Emblem that I've ever played. Now, Nolan, we kind of did this before we hit record. How much of the Fire Emblem series have you played through?
I think I've missed 2 or 3 games out of all of them.
And there's a lot. There's
probably a lot of games. That's
a dozen plus.
Yeah, I love the series. I discovered it by accident in one of those. So another GBA game that I had, you know, the booklets that used to come with games that were really sick?
Yeah.
Okay, I love those, and so I was looking through it, and there was an ad at the back of it for Fire Emblem. So I was like, that game looks amazing. Got it for Game Boy, and it is my favorite in the series still, and I love the rest of the series as well. So long history of Fire Emblem.
Gameplay.
So with that knowledge, coming into these retro games, I knew that I was getting into something much different. And the reason behind that is because even players of Fire Emblem kind of fear these early games, especially the NES ones, because they're clearly harder and less... I mean, it's just harder to get into the game.
I feel like they're not optimized like the newer ones are.
Yeah, I would say they're not optimized. And there's just a huge learning curve in Fire Emblem, period. So when you add on top like the harder or the older graphics and just no tutorial at all, it's really hard.
And by reputation, at least, I think the NES ones especially, my understanding is that when they went back and made this game, they specifically made it a little bit easier than prior Fire Emblem games to try and let more people access it, you know, to make it a little bit more palatable to people. Just because it's one of those games that either you jump in deep and learn all the stuff and figure it out and love, you know, the minutia of swapping around items and navigating menus and placing all your units, or you don't. And on the early ones, I think especially, it was just more daunting for people.
And it shows, if that was their goal, I think personally it shows in the playability of it for someone who's new. Just starting with the way it looks, but we'll get into that. Let's lay out what Fire Emblem is. We're speaking like they're looking at it. So it's a top-down view of a map, tactical view of a map, and you have your blue units who are good, and you can control where they go, and you have the enemy units that are red, usually on the opposite side of the map. There's terrain in between, buildings, and there's always a goal. So whether it's kill all the enemy units or seize the throne or whatever, there's different goals for different maps, and you just maneuver your enemies to go and attack the other ones.
So really, this is broken down to its simplest form. This is chess.
It's a interesting game of chess.
Each piece has their own ability, their own travel, how far they can travel, and then they... Absolutely, it's a big game of chess.
I don't like the analogy.
No, it is, Kenny. Dustin's right. People, it's a meme, but online people call it anime chess.
That's hilarious, anime chess. This is simply why he doesn't like it. It's because I think he really likes chess,
and yeah, he's
got some issues with this game. But that's straight up what it is. Now, that doesn't sound like there's any narrative with that, but what they do is before your battle and often throughout your battles. So in book two, when you get to the final stronghold there on the first stage, and your goal is to kind of what you thought to take out the enemy boss there, you talk to him instead. You don't fight him. You talk to him, and in talking to him, dialogue boxes come up, as well as every single character has a character portrait, which is super nice in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I mentioned to you earlier, you can tell if you are using any kind of intelligence, you can tell from the start who's good and who's evil. Because
they all have a scowl on their face,
right?
They're bad.
The character models don't change, or like the character portraits don't change, like they don't have any kind of animation, so it's kind of just set. And the same one they use, I guess, at the beginning of the game, they are in a game they want to use at the beginning of the game. So you've got some people even on your team at the start that I'm like, hold on, I'm not gonna invest in this guy because he does not look like he's gonna be a good guy.
Yeah. It's really funny, and the dialogue, as you mentioned, is vast and never ending. Between chapters, it's not just the beginning of the game. Like, all throughout the game, you are reading text.
Yeah.
I personally love it. I know that it's definitely the worst, so if you hate it, I understand.
Well, that's how they tell their story.
Yeah, that's how they get it across, and the story is very predictable and corny, and the dialogue, you would think, is cheesy and bad because of the translation patch that you're using. But no, Fire Emblem is notorious for having the corniest dialogue, unfortunately. With, say, for like one or two games in the series, and they haven't gotten better. So that's just their thing, I guess.
I wonder if they've just owned it, because it was something that I noticed when playing Sacred Stones. I enjoy the story because although you said it's predictable, maybe it is, but at least it's not completely linear. It's not like, here's a bad guy and you're going after him. That's kind of what some of the earlier Final Fantasies are, and this is not bashing Final Fantasy, love the series, but it's very linear in the story. It's like, here's a bad guy, go defeat him.
Get the crystals, yeah.
In Fire Emblem, it's always like, here's one thing, and then they kind of branch off in so many different directions, and there's these twists that someone is not really on your side, or this guy is on your side, or there's all these things that they don't just go kind of one direction in these games, which makes it a series where they can kind of do these new games over and over again, because it's kind of a different story each time.
I'll help you out. It's always a war between humans that's going on, which is a distraction to an evil wizard that is trying to bring back the dragon that does that. And there is a twist in there with a good person that ends up being bad, and then you end up beating the wizard and the dragon and sending dragons back home.
And that's each of the Fire Emblem games?
Except for, like, two, yes.
It's a fine formula. Like, I think you said it. It's corny and kind of, I don't know, expected, but to me it goes with the genre. And I have no problem with how they went about storytelling. It's one of the things I like about this game is some of that sort of cheesy, you know, big epic. There's dragons and wizards to kill, and it's what you're getting into with this kind of game.
Sure.
Each of your playable characters have strengths and weaknesses, and they're different units. So once again, think to a chessboard. You've got some that are pawns, and they can pretty much just do one thing. They're very simplistic in design. They can they're limited in range of how far they can travel. And then you've got some pieces like a queen or something. So, like, for example, in this game, Pegasus Riders are ridiculously overpowered, in my opinion.
Love Pegasus Riders. That's always been one of my favorite classes.
They can move super far, and then they can do pretty sick damage, and I think that they can even, like, go over water or certain terrain that other characters have to walk around.
And mountains, yeah. They are overpowered in a lot of games.
So you've got these different characters that do different things. And then on top of that, this is one of the things that I really, really do like about the Fire Emblem series, or I think this, it's kind of just this genre, is that there's different terrain bonuses and banes. So I got Marth in an early stage. I got Marth set up in a fort, I don't know what it was called, and he was fighting all of his enemies from a fort, which gave him, like, significantly more defense, and on top of that, each turn would heal him some. So yep. I just cleared out their whole enemy squadron by remaining in that fort and letting them come to me and fight them.
Yeah, the terrain is, they do a really good job of, like, teaching you, okay, forest is good for evasion, so to avoid damage, or a fortress is clearly good if you're trying to, like in the first stage, this is what you're referring to, Dustin, is a fortress in between mountains. It's a choke point is what that's called in these games. And you post someone up on it, and then enemies just, like, come to you. This first chapter was so hard compared to, like, this did not feel like an intro chapter. It shouldn't have been. And I don't know if they were thinking from the thought that, oh, they've played book one already, so they know the game, so this is book two. So I think there should have been an easier starting chapter. But yeah, the terrain is super important in the way that you go about it. Not only that, there's something called the weapon triangle in Fire Emblem games, where basically swords beat axes, axes beat lances, lances beat swords.
Rock, paper, and you scissors.
Rock, paper, scissors. You get bonuses in hit, damage, evasion, depending on what weapon you're using. It's a really good system.
Dustin, that one was a good analogy.
I don't know why you're defending chess so much.
The chess analogy may not fly, but chess. Rock, paper, scissors for the weapon system works perfectly.
No. Now, the problem with posting someone up on that fortress, though, is that they're going to get, like, too overpowered. And that's another element to getting through these games, is balancing out your experience points that you're getting from every battle, because you can level up every character. And they have stats that are randomly boosted when they level up. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to get so-and-so speed maxed out. It's like, if the game decides it, you will. So you have to make sure that the units you want to use are getting, you know, they're seeing enough battle, which is also makes the game hard.
Now, if you're not a fan of chess, then this might sound like a tedious game, right? And it is. It is. You're slowly moving units across a map and that somewhat get progressively larger in size with more and more enemies. And you have to move them. So some rounds you're literally moving your team and not even attacking. And then when you finally do attack, it's one person attacking another and you go into this kind of little animation. And then if someone slays someone, then you get the experience there, may level up. Or if no one dies, you just kind of go back to your main map, your chessboard, and then you move another piece to fight another character or do another thing. So and it's very repetitive because you've got like 12 units out there at all times. The thing that I found that made it bearable is that you've got the options to up the speed. Not only, so you've got the options to up the text speed and the battle speed. So I found a really sweet spot with it was just the word real, R-E-A-L, as like the speed of battles, which means that it does the battle really quickly and then it gives you a summary of what happened and then it's done. In the speed that it's set previously, it's one attack, it tells you what it does, someone else attacks, tells you what it does, and it was taking way too long to get through one map.
It's a setting I wish I'd discovered.
You didn't know about that one, Kenny?
No.
That sucks because it takes a long time.
And you're right. This game is tedious.
Yeah. The fact that you can actually turn off that battle scene in later games.
You can do it in this one.
You can? Okay. I didn't see that option. I like them, so I never turn them off, but you can completely get rid of that. And what it will do is stay on the map view and then just you'll see the health bars pop up and maybe the stats of like the hit chance and the damage and stuff that you're going to do. But yeah, I think the fact that options are in there is pretty nice and shows that they were headed in a better direction for the series that could have continued to be really, really hard. And it's still hard to a degree if you're not into these types of games or chess. But yeah, they were adding some things in there that like quality of life stuff that I was like, oh, I didn't realize that this was in this game yet. I thought it happened later in the series.
I mean, it's just, you said tedious and you nailed it. When you talk about, as a theory, when you talk about all of this like combat that's going on, I don't know if people really have the picture of this turn-based combat and just how slow it is. You're selecting one single unit, making decisions about where it goes, if it talks to someone, what items it's going to use, what equipment it's going to equip, if it's going to trade equipment with somebody else, where it's going to be placed, if it's going to attack, if it's on a horse, if it should get off the horse.
Yay, so many options.
For like a whole slew of characters. And you have to choose each of those things for every single one of your characters. And then you get to end your turn and watch as the enemy chooses all of those same things for each of their characters. And one moves, and another moves, and another moves. And I know it's hard because tactical strategy turn-based games like this that are older are almost the opposite of like the kind of game we played last week. If arcade games sort of naturally just hold their fun no matter what, anytime you play them, I feel like these have a lot steeper curves to get interest just because you not only have to learn so much, but you have to just sit down and take the time to go through it. And it's a huge time investment for the payoff. And so, yeah, it's the gameplay is slow and lots of menuing, and I had a really hard time with it.
You're what I would call a filthy casual.
Well, hold on.
And
this is...
He has good points. And I would recommend you play the newer ones because you can skip the enemy phase by hitting start. But that's stupid because then you don't really get to see what they're doing and then plan your next turn properly. So there is a point to watching the enemy do all that crap sometimes. So maybe it's just not your thing. I mean, you like real-time strategy.
This is coming from a guy that likes Civilization that takes eons.
I'm okay
with
strategy games. I'm okay with slow and thought out but it's got to feel like there's payoff.
You like fast-paced strategy. I think this involves more thinking about strategy than Civ 2.
Civ 2, we're going straight for that one.
Well, that's the one he holds
tight. Hey, so. I do think, Nolan, because I recall when I played Sacred Stones, I had a fast forward button, not to where, and it wasn't in game. I think it was on the emulator, but it allowed me to still see what they were doing, but to move at a much quicker pace. And yes, it helped tremendously because this is not a quick game. You're moving slow, and so even if you change some of the speeds, it's a game that each level, each stage, each map, it takes a considerable amount of time.
Yeah, that's fair.
Aged.
I want to try to. I'm the mediator here. I'm gonna be the balance because Nolan, right. You're a huge fanboy of the series, which is great. Kenny hates chess, but the
oh he does.
That's not true at all.
You do.
I talk to me here because
all right.
I don't know how many Fire Emblem games there are. Say there's a dozen.
Okay.
Would this be in the top six, best six, or would this be in the lower six? Just gut feeling.
Just me.
Yeah, just you.
Because it'll change.
Totally
okay.
You.
Top six.
Really? Okay, so here's a few of the things that I noticed regarding its age. Like, I feel like being one of the earlier Fire Emblem games, this has some spectacularly bad level design. Not all the way around. There's some great levels, but some of the maps I feel like are just done extremely poorly and haphazardly.
Okay, how like less variety, or what's the knock on it? Too big?
It might be less variety. Okay, so for one example, in one of the earlier stages, I had a choke point that I had to get stuck with one person fighting multiple characters because I could not, I mean, I could move them out and then move another guy in, but it was just at one choke point. And so it made the entire battle sequence and scene lackluster there. There's other stages where just having to trudge through mountains or certain terrain just takes turn after turn after turn before getting to enemies. So just some of the level designs I felt like were not as well thought out as maybe some of the future Fire Emblem games could be.
Huh. Kenny, did you feel that, or did you just not care to even pay attention to that?
No, I felt it a little.
How many chapters did y'all each play? That's a good question to ask when talking about this.
I don't recall. I played some of book one and then some of book two. A couple or three chapters of each. So not much. This is a lengthy game.
It's a really long game.
We didn't even scratch the surface this week because it's a really long game. There's many chapters. Nolan mentioned earlier that it removed five chapters from book one or in book one, and that's
right,
not even
no
a
big
lot.
Deal.
Right, but each chapter itself can be super long, especially for those of us that are casual. However,
there's 21 chapters for book two, which is standard for Fire Emblem. Sometimes less, sometimes more.
And each one can take you 45 minutes or more, like easily.
Yeah.
Now, I will say, Nolan, you had mentioned earlier, having played a Fire Emblem game before, I knew what I was doing this time around. It wasn't near as daunting. I knew how to utilize items. And a lot of the same mechanical things, they kept throughout for future games. They bettered it, you know, but they kept some of those things.
Yeah.
One of the things that they changed, thankfully, is that any character can now visit villages and castles. Only Marth in this game can visit villages, which is a terrible design decision.
Frustrating. It's frustrating. It makes the game even harder.
Massively poor choice.
That adds to story. That adds to your income. That adds to even items at times. And so before taking out the last enemy or before going to the stronghold or before doing that final thing, I have to wait while I move Marth around turn after turn after turn to get him to villages, and that's just a terrible, that takes away the excitement and the energy that was built up in that level.
I'm with you. I think they did that for like plot sake. Like, right. Marth would be the one to persuade the rebels.
It makes the storytelling a lot easier and more natural, for sure. Like, you get why they would make that decision, but it definitely adds one more kind of big hurdle to the game feeling fluid.
But even in later games, right, Nolan, you can taxi people. Like, certain, like, I think a Pegasus rider or a horse rider can pick up another guy.
It's called rescue. It's a rescue mechanic where if you're next to a unit, you can rescue them, and then you can transport them. You can't rescue everyone, though. Weight comes into play. Or it's called constitution. It's a stat. So, like, a giant general, which is a big old class later, you can't pick those up probably because they're so huge.
Well, you can't do that at all in this game.
No, you can't. And the cavalier thing is new to me too, where horseback units, what are those called? Cavalry, can get off of their horse, which I don't get that mechanic.
It's really no
I didn't
to
use
do
it
that.
Because the horse is OP. I mean, the range is why you need it, like how far you can move. And I don't know why they did that. Maybe you have faster stats off of it or something, but. Yeah, there's a lot of mechanics that changed over the years for the better, for sure. And I hear all of your complaints, actually. I understand, even Kenny's. It's tedious.
One of the ways that I do think that it aged well is that I think this was the first title that had a save feature. Or an inbuilt, like you can save.
A traditional file save feature, yeah.
And so, obviously, if you're playing a game this long, you've got to have something like that. So that helps. Mm-hmm. And then there's got to be something said about the characters. If one of the characters himself is going to end up in a huge Nintendo title and be one of the top tiers, is Marth up there in Smash?
Oh, Marth is like top three in Melee.
Golly. There's something to be said that they would bring over, if they're going to bring over Fire Emblem characters, they bring over this one. There's got to be something said about that.
I think so. And one thing for me in this game that I noticed that wasn't in earlier games that lasted and is such a good feature is just a visual representation of items. Like, you actually get a little sprite now for a spear, and it looks different than a silver spear. An iron spear looks different than a silver spear, which is really cool to me. I like to look at my inventory and my units and see what they have, and a visual representation of that is clearly better. And then being able to, like, tell your units apart. In the early game, it was kind of hard. Like, the colors were there, but when you're clicking around on the map, things get lost. So I thought they did a great job of separating those two, the enemy and you, and then the terrain being its own thing too. So you have these three entities on the map, and you're having to, like, it's just easier to look at. And this is the game, again, first time I've playing this one, but this was when I first realized that this is some of where they got serious in looking at the long term of the series and made some really good improvements that stuck. And another thing, I agree with you, Dustin, that I love, each character has their own model, however corny they are. It just really does feel anime-esque, so I guess it helps to be an anime fan if you want to play Fire Emblem.
Here's why I'm having such a hard time with this game. And that's because all of the other things besides the gameplay, I feel like they did an absolutely stellar job with. I really do. I enjoyed the music. Some of it gets a little repetitious. Older games like this are often going to suffer from that, especially when you have, you know, repeating fight scenes.
Yeah.
But it was well thought out. I loved the way they decided to do the looks and the visuals of things. I know there's different preferences on that, but for the kind of game it is, I thought they nailed it on sprites and on your character faces and the models. And I feel like normally I have this conversation of, like, if a game was crafted with love, it just seeps out and that love overflows into me. And I feel like this game was crafted with so much love. And because of that, I really, really wanted to like it, because I do think they nailed a ton of those things. I really do. I just couldn't get over the gameplay part of it.
Hmm. That is really interesting, because you say that often and it's usually true. Like, you can tell this game's not just thrown together. Like, clearly, time and love, intelligent systems is great, and they make great games. And so you can tell. And I understand, like, it is a grind. So I guess, do you have to be a mega fan to like Fire Emblem?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out. It might even just be a personal preference thing. I like some turn-based things. I like some tactical kinds of things. Maybe there was just something about the pace of this that just rubbed me personally the wrong way, because I felt like this game was well made. But I also say that the whole, you know, ultimately, if you don't have fun with a game, it's not a good game. And so I like respected all sorts of decisions this game made. A lot of them were overly complex and whatever, but that's your audience and that's the kind of game it is. And yet I didn't have any fun. And so I was really torn this week. As negative as I sort of came in and started sounding initially, I really was.
Final thoughts.
Well, we're already there. And so we come to the part in our podcast where we determine whether or not we're going to give this game our vote for New Game Plus status, which is just our general thumbs up or thumbs down. And it requires 2/3 of the vote to swing one way or the other. Kenny, you've kind of led perfectly into this. So give your summary and your conclusion.
I've said mostly how I feel about it. This game is well made. There are people that are going to like it a lot. They should be proud of the game that they made. But to me, the pace of it doesn't age well enough for someone to want to pick this game up if they're not already specifically a fan of this genre or this series, to want to go back and for me to recommend one of these early ones. Well made game, but too much for a lot of people. And so I hate it because I think there are really, really good things about it. But for me, didn't have fun with it. And so I can't give it New Game Plus.
Nolan, it's pretty clear that you're a fan of the series, a fan of the game. You want to give your final thoughts?
Yeah. It's hard to not... There's a million things I could say, and it would fit better on like a Fire Emblem podcast because context matters and the series, you know, knowing podcast. The series. Yeah, maybe I should start one.
Secret episode.
But so let me just limit it to our thing. So yeah, I recommend the game. I think it's obvious. I love turn-based strategy games, and I love turn-based strategy games made by intelligent systems even more, and that's Fire Emblem. So I think this one is probably as early as I would recommend. I've never played Gaiden, which is the second one, but again, that one's also been remade for the DS. It's called Echoes. So this is probably as early of a Fire Emblem game that I'd recommend, but I would do it quickly because I think it has so much charm that I didn't expect to be there yet in the series. Like, I loved it. I really did love playing this game this week. I got to chapter 6, which is a castle stage, which I love those. And I think it did have really good map design. Again, that would fit better in a Fire Emblem podcast because I have tons of points to back that up. But yeah, definitely play the game.
Can I record both sides, and then I'll just surprise you guys with which one I actually put into the podcast?
Because
that's how I feel right now. Because I hear both of your sides, and I think there's so much legitimacy there.
Oh, I'm with you.
I'm prepared. Go ahead. I'm prepared.
This is exactly where we were last week with a totally different game that Nolan, you loved. Kenny, you you know, thought didn't quite deserve it, and then...
This is round two.
So we're here again. For whatever reason, Nintendo did not believe there was an audience in the West for strategy RPGs in the early to mid-90s. And so they didn't... There wasn't many of these games that came over. I don't know if it was a patience thing. I don't know if it was like Americans need things to happen here and right now, and other cultures maybe have a lot more what it needs to play games like this. I think they knew some of the reality there, and since then, some of these games have obviously come over, and we've got a lot more tactical strategy RPGs, but relatively speaking, they're few and far in between, yeah? Like, there's not tons and tons of series like this, and there's not tons and tons of games like this, and I think it's for a reason. I think it finds its niche audience, and it thrives there, but for the general populace, for multiple reasons, it doesn't. But where I'm going to land with this is that I think that there are other early Fire Emblem games that I have to imagine does some of the things better, such as level design and character balancing and some of those other things, and maybe even upping your speed just a little bit, that will give you a more positive experience with the Fire Emblem series than this one. And I thought to myself, would I say that, like, do I eliminate, like, if we're doing an early Final Fantasy, do I eliminate 2 because 3 is better or anything like that? And I wouldn't do it just like that, but I would say that, like, if you're coming to the Final Fantasy series and you have an option of these games, play these two instead of these two. So I'm probably going to do that here and say that I'm not going to give this one my vote. Although I will say, Nolan, did you play the remake of this, the new Mystery of the Emblem?
No, also only in Japan.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Because I imagine that the new Mystery of the Emblem is going to be better than this old Mystery of the Emblem as well.
I don't know. I hate the way they redid the graphics. I think it looks bad.
Really?
Yeah, like, yeah. The character models look stupid to me. So actually, I don't know.
Yeah,
it might be better.
Well, I'm gonna go with, I think that there's probably a couple of other early Fire Emblem games that will give you a better taste for the Fire Emblem series. This is a good game, not a great game. They made some changes and some adaptations to better the series as it continued. So this game does not get our vote for New Game Plus status.
It's mine.
That's why he compared it to Civ 2 early, because he knew somewhere deep in his heart that this was going to be the thing that he disagreed with the other ones of us about forever.
I mean,
I get your struggle wrong, there, though, but... Dustin. This almost is sort of it almost boils down to the question of, like, what and why do we give New Game Plus status to games? Because I think on a lot of fronts, it's well made and looks good and has good things. And so we just have to react honestly week to week and game to game, and sometimes it's really hard. And I think this week was really hard.
That being said, I'm not a hardcore, but I am a fan of the series. Like, I appreciate what Nintendo's doing with Fire Emblem, and I am all about the series. Like, I want to say, play the series, find an entry point. Nolan, here. If people that haven't played the Fire Emblem series and are fairly new to this tactical RPG genre, just off the top of your head, where would be an entry point you would say that they should start at? What's a good entry point to the Fire Emblem series?
Fire Emblem 7. It's for Game Boy Advance, and it was the first US Fire Emblem.
Okay.
Boom. Oh, that, yeah.
Best, my favorite one, and best, clearly the best entry point into the series.
Then I'm easily going to say jump in there. If you like it a ton, maybe fall backwards and do some of those early ones, but see if it's your thing, your niche, before you do. Because I think you're right, Nolan, that the people that like this game and series and really get into it will love this game, but it's just not got broad enough appeal.
So we're putting Mystery of the Emblem to rest, but Nolan, to make things a little bit better, I will play a Fire Emblem game this week if you tell me which one to play, and we can do that off podcast. But I've got time this week, depending on what our game is, and so I would be interested in playing another Fire Emblem game, because it stirred that back up within me, tactical RPG. So I would like to invest in one.
I'll think about it. I heard
7 is a great entry point into the series.
It is that time of the week to randomly select our next retro video game of the week. Maybe it will be another Fire Emblem game.
Is there another one on there?
Yeah, there's 3 or 4.
Okay, then maybe.
Let's find out now. We're staying in Japan.
Okay.
I'm all right with that.
With a role-playing video game.
Never mind.
I'm all right with that.
That came out on the PlayStation platform. 1999, single player, and published by Sony. Our retro game of the week is The Legend of Dragoon.
Holy crap. So you're going to get like 5% through the game.
Not even that.
It's another like, really big one.
It's a big one. It's yeah. a lot faster paced than our previous Japan game.
Well, yeah,
but
watching paint dry. Might
one
have
of my been. Favorite RPGs from childhood.
Shut up, Kenny. So this is a pretty big one. I mean, I have friends who rave about this game. You included, Dustin. I've never played it myself, so I'm a little excited.
I'm excited to revisit this week, but I'm more excited to see you guys revisiting. So give it a fair shake. Even try to get the game today so that you can start a little bit. But it's one of those that is story rich, character heavy. And I mean, like, there's dragons and you get to harness the power of the dragon to be a dragoon. Well, you can't beat that.
Fire Emblem.
I'm smiling. Sounds great.
Join us this week as we discuss The Legend of Dragoon in our Discord server. You can find a free invite link on our Twitter. We ask nothing in return that you just don't be a jerk in there. patrons, if you support us on Patreon, you have special roles in the Discord server. So if you haven't checked us out, jump in there. We'd love to connect with you and chat. So we'll talk to you guys this week.
Patrons, you also have special roles in our hearts. And that's a role of gratitude givingness. Yeah, just thanks. Those of you who support us, listen to the show. Our producers, Brian. Wow. When you try and say Zion and Bradley at the same time, you get a new producer, Brian. So anybody out there who wants credit this week for producing the show and your name is Brian and you don't, thanks. But also Zion, Bradley, and Gimbarino. You guys are the best, and we love you.
You've done that before, that exact thing.
Have I?
I had deja vu, but no, you've done that.
Maybe his brain just shuts weird. Off at this point.
I think there's somebody out there named Brian who's really supposed to be a producer.
We said
maybe
that
I'm just speaking to someone.
You can also visit us on social media. That's Facebook and Twitter at NGP Podcast, or YouTube, in which we post our weekly VODs, video on demands, where you can see our faces and listen to this podcast episode in a slightly less refined version. You can also find every Friday Nolan's blind Let's Play of Dark Souls and my blind Let's Play of Ocarina of Time. And we're releasing those on a weekly basis. It's a lot of fun to do. You can listen to us directly on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Music, or any other podcast provider of your choice. Make sure you subscribe so that you are the first to get new NGP episodes each and every Monday morning. Join us next week as we play The Legend of Dragoon. Until then, I'm still Dustin.
I'm Kenny.
I'm Nolan.
And this has been New Game Plus.